Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive. And it's the first Monday after the start of Major League Baseball. We had Major League Baseball galore throughout the weekend. Travis, I think it's the best time of the year. I mean, it was so much fun. You know, the NBA, we're winding down. We're getting set for the Field of 16. The national championship is tonight. But baseball. Baseball. That was the big conversation, I think, over the weekend, outside of the NCAA tournament, of course.
Yeah, April's full of a lot of things. You got the NHL playoffs, NBA playoffs, NFL draft, NFL schedule release dates. You got everything. Major League Baseball, like you said. So April, we're starting to get into a nice month of a lot of things going on.
Yeah, we're
going to
talk baseball today. Joining us on the show a little bit later will be Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher who threw for the San Francisco Giants. He joins us quite often during the baseball season. He said he'd love to join us weekly this year, so we're going to talk to Bill Lasky frequently throughout the year. And now, of course, he works for NBC Sports Bay Area. He's going to talk Giants baseball because he loves the San Francisco Giants, covers the San Francisco Giants. But at the same time, boy, what a weird series that was between the Giants and the Dodgers. That was strange.
Yeah, you get dominating pitching performance both ways, especially from the Dodgers with Wood and Kershaw, and then Joe Panik is the only offense in those first two games.
That's what's so weird. Joe Panik. Yeah, hit nine home runs last year.
Yeah, Joe Panik, the Dodger killer in the first two, and the Dodgers on Sunday night baseball get revenge and knock off the Giants. So, yeah, just baseball's weird these first couple days. You got the Blue Jays taking two out of, three from the Yankees, two out of four. So
two out of four.
Split there. So Mariners knocking off the Indians. So just a lot of, the Cubs lost to the Marlins twice.
Twice. Not once, but twice. So yes, a lot of interesting stuff happening throughout the Major League Baseball ranks. And the way the Yankees got off to such a hot start for them to split with the Blue Jays, I think was a little bit shocking. On top of that, had some other stuff go down in Major League Baseball, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later on in the show. Chance Sisko. Name doesn't ring a bell. It will now because it's the first controversy of the baseball season, which should not be a controversy at all. He's a catcher for the Baltimore Orioles, and yesterday, going up against the Minnesota Twins, the Twins had played a stellar game. Jose Barrios had worked out of trouble a couple of times, had a one-hitter in the ninth inning. The defense shifted. Sisko laid down a bunt down the third baseline. He got on. It was the second hit of the game. And the Twins didn't like it. And Buck Showalter says, deal with it. Now, we're not going to talk about this situation right now. I'm going to save this for a little bit later on in the show. But come on, the unwritten rules of baseball drive me absolutely nuts. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Travis, tonight we have the national championship game. Villanova going toe-to-toe with Michigan. I like Villanova to win tonight. I like them to win quite easily. I love what Jay Wright has done at Villanova, but at the same time, you can't overlook what Michigan has accomplished. I mean, they're going in tonight at underdog, but this team has won 13 consecutive games by an average of 12 points. Do we have a game tonight?
No, I don't think so. I think Villanova wins handily tonight. Villanova has been the best team all year long, in my opinion. I picked them to win it from the start of the tournament. I just think Villanova's guard play is going to be the difference. And Michigan struggled against Loyola. If it wasn't for the five turnovers in a row from Loyola to give Michigan, you know, a chance there and they took over, it might be a different story, but I like Villanova.
You know, the Loyola-Chicago-Michigan game was interesting. Loyola of Chicago fell to pieces in that contest, and I don't know if it was necessarily what Michigan was doing defensively. Loyola just looked like the moment got too big for them.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't a very well-played game.
It wasn't.
Neither game this weekend was. It was kind of boring.
Villanova was played pretty good basketball. I mean, they dominated Kansas. In fact, I thought that Kansas would struggle from the foul line. I thought Kansas had to shoot anywhere from 80% up. We talked about this last week. They did, and they still got manhandled. Now, for all the drama that the men's national championship Final Four has lacked, the women's was awesome. It was amazing, actually. We had three games, two go into overtime, and the third one was decided on a buzzer beater. The women's Final Four was fantastic.
Better than the men's.
More exciting.
More exciting, yeah. It's been more better played on the women's side than the men's side. So hopefully if you're a basketball fan, we get a good game tonight. I just don't see it being that way.
Arike Ogunbowale. Say that name a few times fast. If you didn't know who that was going into the weekend, you know who it is now. Arike knocks down a game winner to eliminate UConn to get Notre Dame to the national championship game. And then with 3 seconds left, puts up a prayer. It falls from the right corner. Notre Dame caps off what was an excellent comeback to top Mississippi State, closing out a game on an AO run. Here's some of the history in the women's college basketball tournament this year. First off, Notre Dame wins their second title 16 years ago. They won their first. It is the longest drought for a repeat champion in women's college basketball history. Okay, that was one. Mississippi State blew a 15-point lead in that national championship game yesterday. That is the biggest blown lead in the history of NCAA women's basketball championship history, which is insane to think about. And then UConn, here's some more history for you. This team hasn't lost a conference game in how many years? Like 2013? Second straight year they didn't play for the national championship.
Yeah, it's that one-and-done tournament format where anything can happen, and you've seen it on the women's side of the bracket where Notre Dame takes advantage and they win the championship. So kudos to Notre Dame. Very well-played game. Not sure what Mississippi State was doing. They had two fouls to give and didn't use them.
You know what? And we can spend a second to talk about that. I don't know that I use a foul in that situation anyway. And here are my logic on this. 3 seconds left, you got to inbound the ball from the side, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost, it's not quite a catch and shoot situation, but it's close.
Yeah.
Even though you have a foul to give, do you want to put yourself in position to potentially foul someone in the shooting motion and put them on the foul line?
Not with how the referees were calling that game.
I wouldn't have used the foul either. I really wouldn't.
You take your chance with that prayer, but yeah, they had two fouls to give. I know a lot of questions how they didn't use it or why they didn't use it, but she threw up a prayer on that baseline and went in.
9 out of 10 times, Arike is not making that shot.
No.
9 out of 10 times, Kobe Bryant's not making that shot.
It was tough. It was a defender tough, all tough draped all over.
But I'm telling you, the women's Final Four was fantastic this year. It was excellent, entertaining. Mississippi State beats Louisville in overtime. They hit a three-point shot with like 5 seconds left in regulation to force overtime, then dominate Louisville. Notre Dame blows a 5-point lead late against UConn. We go into overtime. Notre Dame blows another 5-point lead, but Arike steps up, hits the game winner, and then Arike again with a game winner to end the season. I mean, that was just fantastic. Let's take a look at the schedule in Major League Baseball. We'll begin with a game that's going on right now. The Cincinnati Reds lead the Chicago Cubs 1-0 in the top of the fourth, or the top of the seventh inning, excuse me. The Cubs are 2-2. The Reds are looking for their first win. They were very sluggish, to say the least, offensively in their season opening set, but right now holding a one-run lead over the Cubbies.
Yeah, rookie pitcher Tyler Molly for the Cincinnati Reds gave up one hit. He came out with a pinch hitter to start the seventh, so he pitched well today. The Cubs offense hasn't woke up against the Reds. The Reds going against Washington, that opening series. Tough matchup when you have to go against Scherzer and Strasburg.
Pittsburgh Pirates improved to 4-0, a surprising 4-0 on the season as they topped the Minnesota Twins 5-4. James Taillon did a terrific job on the mound tonight, or earlier today, I should say, for the Pittsburgh Pirates. He logged the win. Pittsburgh now 4-0. That is a shocker, to say the least. I know some Pittsburgh Pirate fans in the area, a couple of radio people, and Pirate fans were agitated, to say the least, this offseason. I don't think anyone envisioned a 4-0 start for this team.
No, I don't think anybody did. So Pittsburgh taking care of business early on, that's what you got to do, is win these games in April, because you can lose a division race or a playoff race in April.
Sure you can. Sure you can. You can't win the World Series, but you can definitely fall out of contention and have to really put together a great run. I mean, these are big games at this stage in the season. Detroit tops Kansas City 6-1 earlier today. That's the Tigers' first win. The Royals are still winless on the young season. The Cardinals top the Brewers 8-4. Still to come tonight, we get Baltimore at Houston. The White Sox will take on the Blue Jays, the Red Sox, and the Marlins. The Nationals travel to meet the Braves. All of those games are in the 5 o'clock hour. 8 o'clock games tonight. We have quite a few of them as well. The Rangers taking on the A's. The Indians will go toe-to-toe with the Angels, who were 3-1. Sohei Ohtani looked to be the real deal, man. He looked good.
He pitched very well last night. Got out of a jam early on in that game. But other than that, he was spectacular. So that's important for the Angels, because if the Angels are going to do anything this year, he has to be the ace, because their bullpen's not very good.
Rockies will take on the Padres. Chad Bettis will take the hill for the Rockies. He's a tremendous story. He really is. Are you familiar with Chad Bettis?
Yeah, I am.
This kid is just a phenomenal story. A cancer survivor, 28 years old. He's going to be taking the mound tonight to take on Brian Mitchell. A couple of postponed games. We get Tampa Bay and New York. Well, we thought we were going to. The home opener for the Yankees called off. Why? Because of snow.
Got snow in New York, postponed. That's why these East Coast teams, in that we should always start these series on the West Coast early on in the season, because the weather's always bad on the East Coast.
Philadelphia and the Mets, that game has also been postponed. And also we get the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks. That game will be in the 7 o'clock hour tonight. Diamondbacks took 2 of 3 from the Rockies in their season opening set. And as far as the NBA goes, no action tonight because of the national championship. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And we will begin with the track and field scene, where on Saturday, the Emory Spartans track and field squad traveled to Copper Hills in West Jordan to participate in the Copper Hills Invitational. Competing against 10 schools in general, Emory finished 5th on the boys' side with 40 points, while finishing tied for 7th on the girls' side of the track. Following Saturday's meet, Emory is now near the midway point in the track and field season. They'll next return to action on Friday as they travel to Manti. Start time for Friday's meet is scheduled for 2 p.m., and of course it will act as a state qualifier. We move over to junior college athletics, and on Friday and Saturday, the USU Eastern baseball team participated in doubleheader action against Utah State University's club squad. And on Friday, USU Eastern swept the afternoon, knocking off the club team 4-0 and then 6-5. Utah State avoided a sweep by defeating USU Eastern 8-5 in the first game on Saturday, and the Eagles followed that up with a dominating 15-0 performance. Now finishing 3-1 over the weekend, USU Eastern is now 17-15 overall. More importantly, this team currently sits at 9-7 in conference play. Now, conference action will resume for USU Eastern this Friday and Saturday. They'll travel on the road to take on Colorado Northwestern. There'll be doubleheader action on Friday and again on Saturday. And that will begin what is going to be an extremely lengthy road trip for USU Eastern. In fact, their final home set is right around the corner, as they'll take on Salt Lake on April 13th and 14th. And after that, finish out the regular season on the road. Now we stick with USU Eastern Athletics, but we move over to softball, and the women's squad participated in conference action once again over the weekend as they went toe-to-toe with the Snow College in a 4-game set in Ephraim. On Friday, USU Eastern dropped a tough one 12-11 and followed that up with another 1-run loss, this time 5-4. On Saturday, it was Snow College picking up 2 more wins, defeating USU Eastern 11-3 and 8-2. Now, the 4 straight losses dips USU Eastern to 6-14 in conference play. The softball squad has now lost 8 in a row, and they sit 11-19 overall on the season. They'll have an opportunity to get back on the winning track when they return to the field this upcoming weekend. They'll go to Rangeley, Colorado to take on the Spartans. And start time for that will be set on Friday at 1 p.m. and again at 3 p.m. And then Saturday, they'll get rolling at 12 p.m. and 2 p.m. Registration for the Spencer's Wishes Swing True for Life Baseball Clinic, which is in conjunction with Major League Baseball's Play Ball campaign, is making its return to Smith's Ballpark in Salt Lake City on Saturday, April 21st. Now, registration for the clinic is open, and it is free for boys and girls up to the age of 17, and it will give them an opportunity to receive instruction from former Major League Baseball players on the same field used as the Salt Lake Bees. This particular clinic is offered free of charge to children in the Castle Country, courtesy of Spencer's Wishes. Now, for more information on the event, or if you would like to print off the official registration form, visit spencerswishes.org or contact Phil Roundy at 435-630-0205. Each participating child and their family will also receive tickets to the Salt Lake Bees game that evening as they take on Albuquerque. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss things.
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Monday edition of the Coach's Corner. We go into spring break for Emory. Last week it was for Carbon, this week it's for Emory. And so things are going to slow down on the Emory High School athletics front, at least for soccer. Now, the boys' soccer squad played last Thursday. They entered in a 2-2 tie with the Union Cougars, and that'll take them into a lengthy break. They'll next take the field on Tuesday, April 10th, to go toe-to-toe with the Richfield Wildcats. And joining us over the phone right now to talk a bit about that, we have Coach Troy Winter. Coach, always fun. Thank you for the time today.
Thank you, and appreciate the time as well, too, Jordan.
Yeah, I always love getting updates on the soccer team, Coach. And believe it or not, now that we are heading into the month of April, the regular season is already halfway over. It's kind of amazing how time just flies by, Coach. But now that we go into April, it's spring break right now, how has this team performed, at least according to your expectations?
I think they performed all right. We've had the tale of, maybe two different teams showing up depending on the games and who our opponent is and stuff. But all in all, with everything going on, I think we're playing really well.
Coach, the competition level in this division is typically very, very good, and you guys did score a victory over Manti a little bit earlier on in region play, and I remember talking to you at the beginning of the season, or going into region play, rather, and you said, Manti's still got to be considered one of the top dogs. You guys get them at home, and you beat them 2-0. I mean, is that the biggest win of the season up to this point?
It is. It's a really big win. It gives you a lot of confidence when you knock off number one, and you're not number one until you knock off number one. And so it was a really good win for us, good building point for a lot of players.
With that being said, you guys are 2-1-1, and you hold a 1-point lead over Grand for first place in Region 15. But, Coach, that's the team that got us, Grand. I mean, you go back to that contest, Grand had a lot of success, 1-0, and defensively they were extremely good in that game, obviously pitching a shutout. How good is Grand in comparison to what we've seen from Manti over the last couple of years?
That's probably the unfortunate thing there with that. I feel that Grand, is a good team, but I don't feel that they're a great team. I really honestly feel that they kind of caught us sleeping, and looking forward to another game, moving forward that way. Not give Grand credit because, they're very well coached. I'm really good friends with their coach, and they come out and we're firing on all cylinders. And we weren't, and so as a coach, I took responsibility for that, but it's a team that we, should beat if we'll show up and play soccer.
It's fun to assess the way things have gone at this particular time of the season because now you kind of have a gauge. And, Coach, another team that we can kind of talk about here is Union. The last time you guys took the field, it was at Union. That game ends in a tie. It's the second time you've seen Union this year. So gauging the talent around the 3A classification, what does that look like and where does Emory fit in?
I feel very comfortable and confident that we fit in right at the top. These other teams are good teams as well too, and it makes us very competitive. I really, really like to be competitive with all these other teams. Not getting blown out 8-0, not blowing another teammate out 8-0, says a lot about the competition within our region and within the 3A classification as well too.
Yeah, I think the latest realignment, I mean, it's been good across the board in most sports. I thought basketball this past year was the most competitive that it had been in quite some time, front to back. Same thing for football. Even though there's a couple of those private schools in there, there's still a golden opportunity, I thought, for a lot of rural schools to have success there. Baseball, it's kind of the same thing. We're seeing a level of parity all the way across the board. It seems like soccer fits right into that conversation.
Yep, absolutely. I agree. It's always, there's always a couple that are, maybe the top dogs you want to knock off and stuff. But, as a whole, the level of competition, I think, is really great. And there's a good opportunity for, the Emory soccer squad to be really competitive, going into the state playoffs and stuff as well, too.
Again, we're being joined right now by Emory Spartan soccer coach Troy Winter. Coach, let's talk about some of the individuals on this year's team so far. You guys have really spread out the offensive love so far this year. It seems like there's multiple kids that are getting the job done. Whenever I get the statistics from you at the end of the game, it seems like offensively there's some spreading out going there.
You know, there is, and that's kind of the unique situation with losing a number of seniors last year and having to try to plug in younger players, as far as sophomores and freshmen and juniors into different positions, and then maybe having a senior or a junior take a different role, than they had last year. And we're still kind of figuring that out a little bit. But, our young guys have really stepped up, and they're giving us good opportunities, good looks. And, our seniors are mature enough that, as a coaching staff, we ask them to play a different position or a different role, to give us a different look or a different opportunity moving forward. They've done that. They're willing to do that. And that says a lot about the caliber of player that we have and moving forward with that. It's very good as a coach to have somebody that's willing to do kind of whatever you ask them to do, whatever role they feel.
Coach, you guys go into spring break, and it is a little bit of a lengthy pause in the action. It seems like you guys were playing great soccer. Sometimes a break like that can be detrimental. I'm sure that's something you've thought about.
Yes, that's one of the things that, trying to figure out how to keep us all in shape, not only in physical but mental shape, in conditioning. It's a double-edged sword, I think, sometimes, just like you said. A break could be really good, get us rejuvenated and go moving forward, or it could make us really lackadaisical and, not push as hard. That's remained to be seen. With the spring break going on, we're still practicing. There's a lot that are on vacation and doing things with family. And those that aren't, we are still working out. We are still conditioning. And so those that aren't, out of town or out of the area have been showing up, and I'm really proud of them for that.
What are some of the restrictions that you as a coach have to kind of follow at this time in the year now that you go into spring break? Is there any moratoriums or anything that you got to pause in the action with?
There's not, fortunately, which is really good, which still allows us to get together, to have some trainings and to have some workouts and that kind of thing. So it's really kind of nice that way, to be honest with you.
On top of that, Coach, as soon as you guys return to the field, I mean, it's a game with Richfield, and looking at the way the region standings are stacking up, I mean, you guys have a couple of very, very big games as we get down to the final stretch of the season. We'll see Richfield twice, North St. Pete one more time, South Sevier one more time, Grand and Manti one more time, and then Richfield to wrap up the regular season. I mean, the final, six games of the season are upon us when you guys return to the field on April 10th.
Correct. Yeah, we'll see how this spring break treats us, and we'll go down and play Richfield, which again is, a very good soccer team. We're going to have to show up and play. And so I'm really looking forward to that, to see how the boys, how they come out of spring break and, come into Monday's practice and ready to go and hungry, ready to take that, take on that region opponent.
Coach, what are some of the things that between now and then you'll try to fine tune? Maybe some of the things that you need to tighten up a little bit in order to have some success as we get down to the final six games of the year?
One of the things is finding that offensive threat. We're still kind of, we had a quality striker, last year with Juan, and trying to find that person that is has that mentality and stuff has been a little bit deceiving. Trying to find that one person that's willing to, take the shots and, take them at any given time is one of the things that we're really searching for right now. We want somebody to go in there and just, pound the ball, pound the net, given the opportunity and stuff. So the other facets of our team as far as our defensive end, and our midfield end are playing really well. We just need to find that one person or two people that will, really take the opportunity to score and give us scoring opportunities.
Are we reaching a point in the season, Coach, where you either know it or you don't know it?
Yeah. And that's coming into the youth. We've got a really good, striker in Zach Anderson that is in the right place at the right time, almost all the time. He's a 10th grader, and that's experience, just the lack of experience, in a lot of instances, but he has the potential to be, to be really good as well, too. And he's kind of showing that right now with the goal scoring opportunities that he's been given. He'll continue to be one that we'll watch moving forward and stuff. Parker Sermon's done a great job as well, too. We've asked him to fill a couple different roles. but we might put him back up on that striker line and see what he can give us there as well, too. So,
well, Coach, it's always fun to get an update from you on how the team is doing. Thank you very much for the time today, and enjoy spring break, and I know we'll talk again real soon.
I appreciate it, Jordan. Thank you so much. And I know the boys look forward to, you know, to hearing the stats and the information that you give them on the air and stuff, the props you give them as well, too. So I really appreciate it.
No, it's my pleasure. Definitely my pleasure, Coach. Thank you again.
Thank you.
We've got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. We're going to move over to talk Major League Baseball. We're now four games deep into the season. Had a couple of games earlier today, but we're going to be joined by Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher. He'll join us to talk about his beloved San Francisco Giants. He spent his days playing the bigs for the Giants. Now he's an analyst for NBC Sports Bay Area. Plus, we'll talk about the rest of the National League and dibble in some AL ball as well. It's coming up here on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hey, this is Nick Tropiano with the Anaheim Angels, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Welcome back to Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM, 750 AM. The first weekend of the Major League Baseball season is in the books. We had some crazy outings, to say the least, and a couple of fun storylines that popped up. Joining us right now to talk a bit about that, Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher who spent his big league days with the San Francisco Giants, now works for NBC Sports Bay Area and also KMBR. We're going to talk Major League Baseball. Bill, pleasure to get you back on for another season. Thank you again for the time.
Yeah, welcome to the 2018 baseball season. And boy, this weekend sure started off with a lot of twists and turns, didn't it?
Oh, buddy, I'll tell you what. We'll start by talking about your San Francisco Giants. We did talk a lot about this series last week, but locked in a four-game set with the Dodgers. And they come away with two wins, 1-0 and 1-0. But then the Dodgers fire back with a 5-0 win and then a 9-0 win. And in fact, since the expansion era of baseball, this is the first time we've ever had a shutout in every game in a four-game series to start a new season. So there's some historic significance, I guess, in this one. Very weird and just odd series, to say the least, Bill.
Yeah, and I tell you what, there were so many different history things that came out of it. They said since 1943, the Reds was the only team that opened up with a 1-0 win the first two games. And then they even went any further. They said, the first time in ever in Major League Baseball history, a player hit two home runs that won the game 1-0, and that's what Joe Panik did in the history of Major League Baseball. So the weekend was definitely breaking history records in L.A., but, you know, when you look at the whole series, I really hope the Giants would have won Saturday or Sunday to get 3 out of 4 with their luck they had the first two games, but the Dodgers' bats definitely exploded, and they came out of there with a 2-2 record, and I'm sure they're happy with that, with absolutely no offense from the three guys they picked up over the offseason.
Austin Jackson, Andrew McCutchen, Evan Longoria, they go, what, 2 for 43, is that right?
2 for 43, wow, in the series, yeah. And really, Austin Jackson was just a bloop to center, and McCutchen drove one to right, but Longoria, 0 for 15, And at the end, some of the reviews that he said, he goes, "Yeah, I'm 0 for 15. I know I am, so I got to start all over again." And, you know, here's a pro that was with Tampa Bay for 10 years, the face of the franchise. And, you know, as he was coming up to bat the first game, he was relaxed. The second game, the third game, I think he was really striving, holding the bat a little tighter. The bat head was behind his hat, head a little bit deeper. And when I look at those things, the guy's stressing a little bit, and he's trying so hard. Today, of course, they have the day off, and then they open up tomorrow at AT&T against the Mariners, and the Mariners have played pretty well. They're 2-1 going into, they beat Cleveland 2 out of 3. So, you know, it's been a good 2-2 record. I'm sure they're happy with that. Definitely they're not happy with the offense.
If we stick in this NL West, I mean, I believe it goes through L.A. once again this year, and I think we got a little taste of what the Dodgers have firepower-wise offensively. And again, they're doing that without Justin Turner. But we take a look at another series, Arizona and Colorado. Saw some interesting stuff in this series as well, and Zach Greinke looked great in his start against the Rockies. Arizona takes 2 out of 3, Bill.
A lot of offense in that series. You know, one time I was flipping back and forth, and it was like 7-7 in the third inning, and I'm like, but they're playing in Arizona.
Figure
that would be the score in Colorado. So I still think, you know, when you look at how the National League West ended last year, you had Colorado and Arizona playing in the wild card, the Dodgers winning the NL West, and I just think the NL West, flip a coin, I really think there's going to be different teams beating up each other. San Diego started off with a good series against Milwaukee, but they finished 0-3. I just think the NL West, from top to bottom, definitely a harder division each year.
Absolutely. I mean, the NL West in itself is it's going to be crazy, Bill. And aside from that one series, the other series that really interests me a lot was San Diego and Milwaukee. And I say that because I don't know if there's a more interesting outfield situation in the National League than these two teams, right? I mean, do you agree with me on that end?
Oh, 100%. I mean, Milwaukee has so many different ways they can approach the starting pitcher. And of course, Yelich, I just love Yelich when he was with Miami. I know the Giants were trying to get him in the offseason. Just a young, great, talented outfielder. You also picked up Kane from Kansas City, who really originated with Milwaukee. He was the first team he signed with. So, you know, picking up both those guys, I think Milwaukee is definitely a surprise team, but they kind of put themselves in that target area, them and the Cubs for the Central.
The Chicago Cubs, this is a team that won the World Series 2 years ago, fell just short in the NLCS last year. First pitch of the season, Ian Happ takes it deep, and that's the first time, and I think since like 1986 that's happened to start off a baseball season. Again, one of those historical footnotes. It'll be a trivia question one day. But outside of that, they split with the Marlins. What do you like in Chicago or dislike with the Cubs this year, Bill, as we get set now for the new season?
Yeah, I still think, you know, their stars always are going to come out. Rizzo, Bryant, those are the two main guys. And, you know, getting a split in Miami, I was really a shock of that, the one game going 17 innings. I just look at their starting rotation, picking up Hugh Darvish. I think that's a big plus for them, along with Lester and the other part of that roster and the starting rotation. I just think now they're going to go into Cincinnati here for three games. Cincinnati just looked really bad, and that team's just falling apart, I think. I think they're just one of the teams that just are going to struggle this year. But when you look at the Cubs, I think the Cubs are just trying to get on the track again to get going. And to split with Miami, it surprised me. Miami, of course, is just really no stars, no attendance, nothing going on down there, and they're going to have to rebuild. But I just think the Cubs are going to be another one of those teams that are going to be at the top again. And I still think Milwaukee's got a great chance of winning that division, you know. And I just don't think St. Louis has enough. I look at the NL East. I really like the Mets at that starting rotation stay solid.
You know, it's funny, you mentioned the Reds and then you mentioned the Brewers. I'm with you. I think the Brewers have a terrific chance to win that division because I think their roster is incomplete. I think there's too many assets on that team for this roster to stay pat. I think they make a move at some point in time this season. But as far as Cincinnati goes, I mean, Eugenio Suarez gets paid. Joey Votto's a guy that I think could actually win the Triple Crown. I think he's that talented offensively. You have some guys like Nick Senzel coming up from the minors. You got Blandino. Jesse Winker's a guy that I think is going to become an everyday player. At what point in time do the Cincinnati Reds take a look at the big picture and see what they could get for Joey Votto?
Boy, I tell you what, you got to look at who needs the first baseman. That's the first thing. And then you got to take a look at all your contending teams that could take on that payroll, too. As you know, we talk about all the time this luxury tax, and all these teams seem to jump in that same basket once that first team said, oh, no, we're not going to go over it. And it just seemed everybody was stuck with it. And I think that's the nature of the beast right now until the next free agency when all the big studs are going to come out, the Harpers, the Kershaws, Machado, you know, all these big guys, then they're going to go, okay, let's open the bank and see who we're going to grab. So I just think that the contending teams, this thing's going to be real easy by All-Star break. I really believe there's going to be top-line teams and lower teams, lower-tier teams. And you might be able to steal a Votto from a lower-tier team. And there's no doubt he's going to contend. You put him in any type of batting order, and he's going to be a stud. He's just a great hitter. You talked about the Triple Crown. he could possibly do that for any team.
One of the teams in the National League, Bill, that I found a lot of, it was very fun to watch, is the Atlanta Braves. I mean, they have a lot of young talent coming up on this team. Ozzie Albies, of course, everybody's waiting for Okuna to make the, you know, get the call to come up to the bigs, which I believe will happen within the next couple of weeks. And they didn't look that bad over the weekend. I mean, they went up against a Philadelphia team that I think a lot of people thought made vast improvements over the offseason, yet the Braves put up a lot of runs over the weekend, and I think this is going to be a fun team to watch throughout the year.
I do, too. I mean, and you know, the thing about it, you look at all the young talent, some of the guys have gone in there 1 or 2 years, and they're starting to gel, and they see the progress. They're starting to see the younger talent coming up, giving him an opportunity, and you hit it on the head. They're scoring runs, and when you get teams to score runs, they start believing in themselves. The confidence factor comes into it. Move the line. You hear all the different adjectives that hitting coaches always say. You know, get the guy over, doing the little things that manufacture runs, and that's the Atlanta Braves of 2018. I watched a couple innings of their games, a few of them, and they did. They looked like a team that can not contend, but at least starting to move in the way to contend as these younger players get more experienced.
We have to talk about the AL because, of course, here in the state of Utah, we have a lot of transplant fans. The New York Yankees made big waves. Giancarlo Stanton was fantastic in his debut for New York, but at the same time, they end up 2-2 over the weekend. And the Boston Red Sox are at the top of the American League East. You know, when we talk about the AL, I like some teams coming out of the West. Of course, you got the World Series champs. I think the Angels are the best defensive team maybe in all of baseball in the Central. I think you got the Indians. The Twins are going to be interesting. But front to back, it's really hard to go against the AL East, right?
I would believe so, too. Just the starting rotations, the middle of the order. Of course, the Yankees get snowed out on opening day to day. I got to watch Ohtani pitch yesterday against the Oakland A's. He's for real. Topping a couple times at 100 miles an hour. I think the Angels, I just don't think they have a closer. You know, they have three different guys that can do different things. I just think that's one of their keys that the Angels are going to have a problem with. But, you know, I got to watch this Oakland Coliseum light up. They had over 250 media people from Japan there. And he went out there, and it looked like he had pitched in the big leagues 10 years. He was stoic. Nothing bothered him. Chapman hit a home run off him. Didn't bug him. He retired the next few guys, and he just got right back in a row through six solid innings. Good split finger, a little breaking ball, but 94, 96, 98 every time was high, mid-90s or above. And like I said, a couple of them, he hit 100. And I know the Giants are going after him very much. And a young, talented kid that's going to be the next Babe Ruth, as we know, he's going to be DHing as well as pitching. But again, they're going to a six-man rotation to give him a little bit more time. And we'll definitely see how that transpires as the season progresses. But I'm right with you. I think the AL East as well as the Houston Astros, those are going to be the three contending teams, the Yankees, Red Sox, and Astros, as we get down to the wire.
Hey, it's the best time of the year. Baseball season is back. Bill, I appreciate you taking out the time to join us. Before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
Yeah, on Twitter, I'm at Lasky19, doing a little bit of that. And just more or less, if you get on KNBR on weekends, we're streamlining KNBR 680. If you want to get on, we just pull it up on your podcast, and we have radio live. We did our first show this past Saturday. Vita Blue, of course, is my partner. Had some great guests. We interviewed Robbie Thompson, Chris Spire, and Kevin Mitchell, more of a San Francisco Giants show for the Giant fans out there. But just some great interviews with some class players, and we're going to continue to do this, and we're on pretty much every Saturday. So take a look on KNBR and pick us up and give us a listen. But at the same time, I can't wait to continue to talk baseball with you and all the fans in Utah. It's a great time of the year, and love talking baseball with you, my friend.
I love it too, Bill. Thank you very much for the time, and I know we'll do it again soon.
Excellent. Thank you.
Not a problem at all, Bill. Look forward to the conversations in the future. Again, that's Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher, taking out the time to talk some Major League Baseball here on Drive Time Sports. We're going to break one more time. We'll come back and put the final touches on this edition of the show when we return.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Back to close out this edition of the show. Talk some college hoops. Tonight we get Villanova and Michigan. Could have spent the entire show talking about this game. What do you think tonight? You say a blowout in favor of Villanova.
I like Villanova, and I just think Michigan just won't be able to hang. I think they're going to dig themselves a hole early. Villanova's going to jump out like they did against Kansas, and I think it's going to be too much for Michigan. We've seen what Michigan got down to Loyola. They're lucky that Loyola turned the ball over on five straight possessions. You can't do that against Villanova.
Yeah, look, and I'm not taking anything away from Michigan in that contest, but Loyola of Chicago's offense got very stale. They stopped moving, the spacing was horrible, and a lot of those turnovers, I thought, well, they had five straight?
Five straight, the forced. Every single one was forced.
Yeah. I mean, I really don't know that Michigan's defense did a lot to force those turnovers after the moment got big. When Marcus Towns went down for Loyola of Chicago, that was huge as well.
It was a turning point.
Yeah, that kid's kind of the glue that holds that team together. Not an indictment on Michigan. Again, they've earned the right to play for the national championship. There's no question about it. But to me, this Villanova team looks too good. And one of the things that Jay Wright has done, I know you're a big Jay Wright guy.
Love Jay Wright.
Okay. He's going for his second national championship in 3 years.
Puts him in elite company.
Very elite company. And a lot of the offenses that you see in the NBA, Jay Wright runs the exact same thing. We're talking about a team that doesn't need a legitimate five. They're going to run a stretch four. And they're proving that you can score loads of points. They scored 95 points on Kansas without a legitimate big. Think about that.
Yeah, Jay Wright going for a second title in, 3 years? Put him over, more than Jim Boeheim and more than Coach Cal. So, yeah, Jay Wright going for elite company, like you said. His offense, it flows. He gets those kids to stay 2-3 years, and he builds that program. He's one hell of a coach.
Well, and here's the thing I just can't quite grasp, and I think we're just as guilty of it as anyone else. Why is this team still considered like the lovable underdog? I get Xavier. I understand why not a lot of people were high on Xavier. Villanova, to me, just doesn't get the credit that they deserve.
No, they should. They absolutely should. What Jay Wright has done, Villanova is one of those teams that, you know, they were accustomed to losing maybe first weekend, but Jay Wright turned it around there, and going for a second title in 3 years, it's incredible. He's one great coach.
It'll put him one behind this list. Bob Knight, Jim Calhoun, Roy Williams. Yeah. If he wins tonight, he's going to be one championship behind Bob Knight, Jim Calhoun, Roy Williams. He'll be two behind Adolph Rupp. He'll be three behind Mike Krzyzewski. And he'll be eight behind John Wooden.
Yeah, XOs-wise, he's one of the best in the game. And if you want to compare, I know a lot of people compare him to Coach Cal, but it's not even close. And I'm a huge Coach Cal guy, but XOs-wise, Jay Wright is 10 times better than Coach Cal.
He'll have the same amount of national championships as Dean Smith if they can get it done tonight.
Wow. All you can say is wow.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's time to give Jay Wright. How long does Jay Wright stay at Villanova?
As long as he wants, until maybe there's a challenge maybe in the NBA and he gets a big contract offer. I don't see
he can
see
coach
it.
In the NBA. There's no question he can coach
I just
the
don't,
NBA.
I just don't know if he wants to. I mean, he has a good thing at Villanova, so I just don't think that he would go that route, but he can coach up there, yeah.
Here's the other thing I want to point out, and I could be wrong. I love to do mock drafts. I love putting mock drafts together. NBA basketball, it's easy for me to put a mock draft together because there's two rounds. There's 60 picks.
Mm-hmm.
I have one kid in tonight's game slated my top 60 come NBA draft time. One kid, and that's Jalen Brunson. That's it.
They can play on my team any day.
I think Brunson is a borderline first-round pick. If he wins a national championship tonight, it's going to help his stock if he does decide to leave. But he's a junior. Scouts are going to look down upon that. I think he's the smartest player in the country. I've said that for a while now. I love the way he plays basketball. But at the end of the day, there's one kid in tonight's national championship game that I think gets drafted this summer. And he's a borderline first-round pick, which brings me to something that we can talk about on the show tomorrow, the one-and-done rule. Does it hurt major programs?
I'd say yeah.
I think that's proof of it.
Yeah, because the one-and-done guys are going to go to the Kentuckys and the Dukes and North Carolina, where Villanova's like, all right, we're going to plunk these kids that are 2-3 years. We'll build that, and it's worked for Villanova because they're going for their second title in 3 years with kids that are staying 2-3 years.
Worked for Michigan.
Works for Michigan. Yeah, Michigan's back in the title game again.
So it's a It's an interesting topic, but again, I think we have one kid tonight, and I bring that up because I said earlier on, I like watching the NCAA tournament to look for certain individuals. That's where I get a lot of the enjoyment out of the NCAA tournament. I like to watch individuals and see how they can improve their draft stock. One kid in tonight's game, I will project one kid gets drafted, maybe two at the absolute most, but as it sits right now, Brunson's the only kid I see being selected 80 days from today, 80 days away from the NBA draft, by the way. Remember, no NBA basketball tonight. The Utah Jazz and the Los Angeles Lakers will take the court tomorrow. It's a big game for the Utah Jazz. We'll talk about that on the show tomorrow as well. Watch the national championship game. You'll enjoy it. I'm going to go with Travis. I'm going to take Villanova. I think they win by double digits.
Yeah, I just don't see how Michigan's going to hang with that guard play of Villanova.
I think it's a close game until about 6 or 7 minutes to play in the contest, and Villanova pulls away.
Yeah, I'm with you.
We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. I want to thank Bill Lasky for taking out the time to join us, and of course, Emory High School soccer coach Troy Winter. Tomorrow, we're going to be joined by Rob Smith. We'll talk Emory High School baseball. For Travis Anderson, I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We are out.